actually wrote one whole book on education, and this was his main message. You should train guardians, you should educate the guardians. When they become big then they are full of love, full of wisdom, and it is the love that leads them to apply wisdom in every practical field. Now this whole argument is a good philosophical argument. Actually, I was only now illustrating the method of arguments. In philosophy, you take different sets of facts, one after the other. Then you see the implication of every set of facts. You see the assumption behind every set of facts. Then compare and contrast these assumptions and implications. And as you do so, new insights will go on growing in you. New dimensions will come before you. It is as if something is kindled and you begin to have insight. Your vision becomes larger and larger. You begin to see complexity after complexity. And when you arrive at widest complexity, in which all the sets of facts are presented, that is the method of philosophy. And this method Plato called dialectic. Dialectical arguments. This process of expanding by selecting specific sets of facts, trying to see the assumptions and implications from the facts. These two words are very important, assumptions and implications. When a fact is presented, you consider the assumptions. When I gave the example of whitewash of the school building, there were certain assumptions behind the presentation of these three facts. The assumption was that the school building, although needed whitewash, one could do without it for a year. Laboratory equipment was not so very pressing. The performance of a drama is basically given for experience. And if you don't perform well, then the kind of experience which was to be given would be postponed. And maybe that it will never come again. These were the assumptions. It was in this context that you decide costumes more important than this or that. So assumptions and implications. So you go on judging the assumptions and implications until you are able to combine all the possible facts in a given situation and then arrive at a judgment. This is called dialectic. Now having done it, I will ask you one more question. When we were reading the first chapter of the Life Divine, we had identified one argument as a dialectical argument. Now let us recall that argument and see why we had called it dialectical argument. Anybody can recall that argument which we had pointed out as a dialectical argument? If you don't remember, don't worry, because as I have told you, philosophy is a very interesting and joyous experience in which you often repeat the same thing until it becomes your second nature. That was analogical argument, dialectical argument. The second paragraph of the Life Divine's first chapter begins with that argument. Now you recall, you have got the book called The Life Divine? She has got it home. I think this book is here, so I can give right now. And since you were not with us at that time, it will be your first experience. So let us see. You open the first chapter and see the second paragraph. Statement of a fact contrasted with another set of facts which contradicts it. Look at the second paragraph of the first chapter. These persistent ideals, God, life, freedom, immortality, these are the persistent ideals of the race. You can see in the previous paragraph, the last phrase is God, life, freedom, immortality. These are persistent ideals of the race. That's a fact. Now Sri Aurobindo says, these ideals are contradiction of the normal experience of humanity. This is one fact. But they are affirmations of higher and deeper experiences. So there is a conflict between two facts, the normal experience and the higher experience. So in the normal experience, these ideals are contradicted. In the higher experience, they are affirmed. Now, as a result of this contradiction and affirmation, you must go further because you can't rest. When you are presented with a contradiction and an affirmation, the human mind cannot rest. It must move forward. That is a dialectical movement. Dialectical movement is one in which there is a dynamism and there is a pattern in the dynamism. Affirmation, contradiction, affirmation, contradiction, until you arrive at a final resting place. As in our case we examined, we were pushed from one stand to the other, from that to another, from that to another, until we came to the definition of philosophy, wisdom and love for wisdom, and wisdom as that which sees the whole and which can apply the whole. That was our conclusion. Similarly here, normal experience contradicts God, life, freedom, immortality. Higher experience affirms. Then there is a battle. To the ordinary material intellect, you have got that phrase? Towards the end of that second paragraph, now you read it. To the ordinary, so now this is the middle point of the dialectic. To the ordinary material intellect, which takes its present organization of consciousness for the limit of its possibilities, the direct contradiction between the ideal and ordinary experience is a proof that ordinary experience is valid and that which contradicts the ordinary experience is invalid. Therefore, the ideals are invalid. This is the conclusion of the material intellect. So this is the middle point of the argument. Now then comes the final argument. But if you take a more deliberate view of the world's workings, that direct opposition appears rather as part of nature's profoundest method and the seal of her completest sanction. Sri Aurobindo now gives a new fact into picture. What is that? If you look into the meaning of opposition, then insight will arise. Just as in our argument about justice we were going on, a new set of facts connected with the bread, three children and the mother, a new idea emerges. Similarly, now Sri Aurobindo says that opposition should be looked into, and we should ask the question, why is there opposition at all? Is there a meaning in the opposition? That's right. It is nature's profoundest method. It's a new fact which has emerged. New insight. It is that insight which leads us to a new conclusion. Right? This is the example of a dialectical argument. So let us define now. Dialectical argument is one in which there is a statement of facts, one set of facts, which is compared and contrasted with another set of facts. As a result, there emerges the necessity of discovering a new set of facts. And this process can go on until you come to a widest vision, in which the totality is included, and you can then apply the total vision into all the sets of facts which have come up, and you get a satisfying answer. That is a dialectical argument. Alright? It's a good statement of what is a dialectical argument. Sorry, I give you so much trouble to find out this book again, because I felt for any learning it is best to have the text before the eyes. Now it is much more clear as to what is the difference between science and philosophy. We shall repeat now. Science seeks facts based on observation, experimentation, verification, and derivation of a conclusion which is universal. I have given the example of the material bodies which are thrown upwards, they gravitate downward. all objects which are thrown upward, all material objects which are thrown upward, they naturally gravitate downward. This is a scientific fact. Philosophical method is to start with facts, and you compare and contrast one set of facts with another set of facts. As a result, there will be a chain of the need to discover another set of facts, until in your argument you include the whole universe. You arrive at the totality of facts, and the insight arises out of it. This awakening of the insight is wisdom. When the totality is presented to you, all the facts are presented, you can then see in a vision that is whole, and then the insight arises out of it. That is philosophical knowledge. It is learned by discussion. Why discussion? Because some facts which you know, I may not be knowing. So when I state something, then you point out, oh, but this other fact is there. So you bring another set of facts. It is also said, therefore, that philosophy is best studied by debate. But very often debate takes a form of battle, in which one tends to become rigid. I stand on one point of view with one set of facts, and I deliberately begin to oppose another point of view. That is the evil of a debate. Debate is good, provided you do not take a stand, and you begin to argue for the sake of winning the argument, not for the search of the truth. That is the evil of the method of debate. And good philosophers, therefore, even when they take recourse to debate, they do not allow you to remain in the state of opposition. Sri Aurobindo says, when in the debate thou hast won, remember that thou hast missed a chance to know the truth. If you win in the debate, then remember that you have lost a chance to know the truth. Therefore, our aim should not be to win in the debate. Our method should be to learn what is the truth. Therefore, when you are debating against somebody, try to understand his point of view. Assimilate the truth behind his point of view. Yes.
I have a dialectical dilemma about legitimate means.
Yes, tell me.
Because I have read somewhere from Swami Vivekananda.
Yes.
That he has said that to satisfy the physical hunger of a man, it's good to satisfy this physical hunger of a man, but he might be hungry the next day. But to satisfy the intellectual hunger of a man, it's more deeply satisfying and longer lasting. But even better is to satisfy the spiritual hunger of a man, which will make him free from all hunger.
Forever.
Forever. Now, somewhere else I have read from Tagore in one of his poems, he says that you cannot tell to a hungry man admire the beauty of the moon, because in the moon he will just find the image of a chapati, of a roti.
Piece of cheese.
So, this is a contradiction somewhere. There is a contradiction here. But he says that, oh, you cannot make a hungry man admire the beauty of the moon.